This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. David Javerbaum is an American comedy writer. He's a winner of 12 Emmys. He's a former head writer, executive producer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's also the writer of books, The Last Testament, The Memoir of God, What to Expect When You're Expected. He's also known for a controversial Twitter account, The Tweet of God. David's in town today to speak at the Barshop Jewish Community Center. We're going to take your calls if you want to talk to David about The Daily Show or his tweets. Give us a call at 614-8980. You can find out more information about tonight's appearance at the Jewish Community Center going online to www.jcccsanantonio.org. And The Last Testament will be on sale there, and he'll sign it for you. So join the conversation, 614-8980. David Javerbaum, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So many things to talk about. I didn't mention your musical ability, and you're involved in as a lyricist and writing songs and for the stage. I have no idea where to begin. There's so many things to tackle. But I guess since today is National Day of Prayer, the tweet of God, this Twitter account that you have has been like very lively today. What's happening with that?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing from God, he's been ignoring five times as many prayers as he usually does. It would be a very busy day for him were he in the business of answering prayers.
So you do the tweet of God. You take on the personality of God, and you answer tweets. You have hilarious witticisms, and people get offended. You know, I've seen some people shoot back tweets at you saying, "Whoever this is, you're going to HE double hockey sticks."
One of the more pleasurable things I do with that is if somebody sends back a particularly offensive or offended response, I check out that person's account, and if they seem like a legitimate stick in the mud, I simply retweet exactly what they sent me.
It's
and I let my followers stuff. Handle the rest. And it's really quite something.
All right. So let's talk about how controversial this tweet is. I mean, it's a tweet. It's a Twitter account. It's you're not really God. You're not really tweeting God. You're not trying to portray God.
You're really doing me a favor by calling it controversial. I'm trying to get it controversial, and maybe this appearance will help do that. It's gotten very popular. We have over 650,000 followers now, and obviously I am not God, and my involvement in the Twitter account is limited to the fact that when it comes to the tweets, I type them and I send them. But in terms of conceiving them, they are obviously conceived from whole cloth, from the mind of the divinity, who then sort of uses my body, my fingers specifically, to enter them and then send them.
Do you go into a specific state, your eyes roll back in your head, and suddenly you have no idea what's going on?
No, it's kind of a fugue state where all of a sudden it'll be 2 minutes later, and I'll be somewhere else, and I'll think, oh, I see. The big man has once again, used me to tweet, and then I wonder what I tweeted, and then I check it out. And often the things that have been tweeted I find offensive. I can't support everything on there. The views in the Twitter account that I write are not necessarily mine.
And so you have the book, the Last Testament, a Memoir of God. Also, I mean, you're blatantly blasphemy. It's making fun of religion. And Walmart wouldn't sell it.
No, Walmart wouldn't sell it. But that's okay. I mean, if Walmart chooses not to sell a book, that's okay, because I don't necessarily consider Walmart to be the epicenter of American literary culture. What was more hurtful to me was when the book came out originally that Simon & Schuster UK refused to publish the book, and it is not available in print in bookstores in England because they were afraid of the reaction it would get.
Banned from Britain.
And that kind of was flattering, because that put me in company with authors that I should
James
not be
Joyce.
Mentioned within the same paragraph with, like James Joyce and Mark Twain. And to be have something in common with them in that respect was awesome.
Brent Bozell, founder and president of the conservative media watchdog group.
Great guy. I love him.
The Media Research Center has deemed your book an anti-God book. And he's blasphemy, take the Lord's name in vain, with such gleeful abandon, dreadful state of our top publishing houses. Not a fan.
No, not a fan. You know, we've definitely gotten some negative reaction from people who obviously are choosing to not heed the word of God, because that is what the tweet of God is. Again, it's the word of God.
Well, so the modern state of atheism in the United States, there seems to be a growing movement of atheism in the United States. And whether or not, you know, God is, I guess you, since you tweet for him, you probably are on first name basis with God, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of reminds me of like the George Burns and the John Denver sort of relationship.
Yes, that's the best case scenario. Worst case would be like Alanis Morissette and whoever she was working with in Dogma. But yes.
Idea is with like modern atheism is that you just kind of keep it to yourself, you know. If
yeah.
the other people have their religion, that's their business. Why run it down?
I definitely believe that people who are atheist are sort of mad as hell and less inclined to take it anymore. A lot of the hundreds of thousands of my followers I have due to the fact that Ricky Gervais, who is probably the world's most prominent atheist at this point, has taken my account under his wing, and we exchange pleasantries via Twitter, and he recommends my account, and that's gone very well.
He's very much in your face about atheism.
He's very much, yes, in everybody's face. And, you know, I believe that the effects of not only religion, but absolutist thinking or non-thinking, absolutist worldviews in general, are painfully evident. And I'm not... It's hard to say this, but I'm not necessarily political by nature, but I do think that atheists are a little sick and tired of having to be apologetic for their worldview, which happens to be the correct one.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a lot more to talk about. You know, The Daily Show, which you're the executive producer for. You've got a pilot on Amazon, which they're producing their own content, like shows, and
yep.
the pilot is Browsers.
Yes.
It's kind of a musical takeoff of Huffington Post.
Yes, that's right. Amazon has eight pilots, actually six kids shows and eight comedy pilots that they now have on their site that are available for everybody to look at and vote and say, I like this one, not this one. And they will make a decision partly based on audience reaction and partly based on their own feelings. My show is called Browsers. It's set in the Huffington Post or something very much like it. And it happens to be a musical, which is another interest of mine. I've been writing musicals ever since I was in college.
You won an Emmy for a musical that you wrote the beginning of the Tony Awards?
That's right. I wrote a couple of years ago, Neil Patrick Harris sang a song that I wrote for the Tony Awards called Broadway, It's Not Just for Gays Anymore. And that won an Emmy, and that was a good one.
It was. Okay, we're going to talk more about that, more with David Javerbaum when we come back. If you want to jump in the conversation, ask him a question, give us a call, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.
There have been two constants over the last 11 years at The Daily Show. One, no restrooms for women. Two, a young man named David Javerbaum, who has been with us as a writer, head writer, executive producer, consultant, book editor, all these variety of jobs over the past 11 years. And he has been paid almost the entire time. He is leaving us, as it were, over these last 11 years. You don't know him. No. Awe is right. He is going on, obviously. He's here tonight to collect unemployment. So I would like to offer, if I may, as tribute to his amazing 11 years, your moment of Javerbaum.
I'll be here if you need a loose screw.
Whoops. David Javerbaum.
All right, that was The Daily Show, the Jon Stewart saying a fond farewell when David Javerbaum, our guest this half hour, left the show. And
I haven't heard that in a couple of years, and literally, as you can attest, it brought a little tear to my eye. It really did.
And it was such a heartfelt, you know, so long, and he used up so much airtime on basic cable. That's like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, exactly, hundreds of dollars.
And so
it was an amazing experience, and I still talk about The Daily Show in the present tense, even though it's been 3 years, not because I'm under any delusion that I'm still there, but because it's just such a permanent part of my creative soul that it does feel like it's still kind of vibrating inside me.
If you have a question for David Javerbaum about his tweets for God or his books or working for The Daily Show, give us a call. The number is 614-8980. So what was it like to work at The Daily Show? Certainly, you know, a comedy show, but people really want it to be so much more.
We were in the bubble. When you work there, you're really in a bubble. In our case, it was a very nice bubble. It was a very comfortable bubble. We all loved working together. And we sort of all took this ride together, led by John, you know, and primarily caused by John. But all of us went on this ride where we went from this comedy show to being the show that every time I do an appearance, people say, you know, everybody gets their news from The Daily Show and, you know, it's the most important thing and this and that. And, you know, it was an incredible experience. For me, it was a comedic experience. And it was an experience where we were trying to create comedy, but to do so sort of out of news, out of the hardest material sometimes that there is. To do it fairly and to not do it cheaply. And to do it in a way that made us, not necessarily the audience, but us, feel good as we went home to our families that night.
Well, you know, I mean, The Daily Show existed before there was Jon Stewart. There was, Craig Kilborn who did the show?
Yes, and he was there. I did not get there until shortly after he left and Jon came aboard.
And so I wondered, like, what is it that changed? I mean, it was there. It was almost like a placeholder of a show. I didn't really light the world on fire like The Daily Show does today. What's different?
Any late night show, and I've worked at two, but any late night show is just pretty much, as Emerson would say, the length and shadow of one man or one woman, the person who's hosting the show. And what changed is exactly what you think, Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart, you know, is that guy. He is that brilliant comedian, insightful observer of human foibles, and a great boss, and a great guy, and a great friend. And I think he found his voice. He was able to sort of explore what he wanted to do. And over months and years, the members of the staff became more suitable to him, and the nature of the show became more suitable to him. And now it really reflects – it's a reflection of him. And all of us contribute to that by means of sort of – writing jokes and sort of helping him express his worldview are very privileged and feel very lucky to get to do
it. There have been some instances where blips in the radar screen about Jon Stewart not being a good boss. There was something accusing him of being unfair to women writers.
Yes, I was there when that article came out and was written by two.
It seemed like he kind of alluded to that in that bit just now.
Yeah. John is fair to men, women, whites, blacks, Hispanics, Jews, Christians, Muslims, any group you can have. That article was written by two very disgruntled ex-employees who happened to be women. They were fired not because they were women, but because they sucked.
Okay. There are women on the staff now, writers, and they're very.
There's at least three that I can think of. If not more, I don't know the exact composition of the staff right now in terms of the writers of the writing staff because it's been 3 years. The writers, are, I think, at least 3 out of 10, and every other position in the show is 50-50, if not 60-40. And I can tell you, because I've done it myself, that when we read applications, we read them blind. We read them name blind, color blind, gender blind. It's very easy. You just cover the names and you just read the applications. It's quite simple to do.
Yeah, but I would certainly think that diversity in the writer's room, I mean, I've certainly seen it help out quite a bit with the correspondence, has, you know, helped, you know, bring different points of view and tell America's story effectively.
Yeah, I mean, are you saying we haven't succeeded in that? Or
no, I say that's. I think that you have to give deference towards diversity. You have to bring people in. You say colorblind, let's read this blindly, but it's like, well, we need more diversity. Does it just work out that way?
Diversity is a laudable goal and a preferable goal. It is not the only goal. No. Quality of a writing staff.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Is ultimately a more important goal. It's not. That's not to say it's.
But I'm just saying not to have diversity for diversity's sake, but yes. Being able to bring comedy and tell America's story and to tell different points of view. You need different points of view at the table.
Yes, I agree. Having said that, however composition we've had over the years and continue to have, in my absence 3 years later, I think the show is doing a good job of. Doing whatever it is our show does, which I'm not even sure
it's working.
I would characterize it.
If we're talking about The Daily Show with former Daily Show executive producer David Javerbaum, we've got a question for a comment about him or the show or his tweets of God and his book, The Last Testament. He's going to be at the Jewish Community Center tonight at 7 o'clock speaking and signing books, reading from the book. And that is you can find out more information online at www.jccsanantonio.org.
But you don't have to be Jewish to go. It is open to any religious group or no religious group. It just happens to be at the Jewish Community Center here in San Antonio.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to. Because I'll be there.
That's right.
So they let me there, so and I'm not Jewish.
There you go.
So, with The Daily Show, it always seems like you always want to come back to the fact that it's a comedy show. It's not there to carry political water for any one particular group or the others, right?
Yes. Now, obviously, as you can tell from watching the show, in many, many cases, 9 times out of 10, we would be considered liberal in terms of what side we take or, who we're going after. That's off. I mean, is the show's staff biased in favor of, for example, gay marriage and being treating gays equally? Yes. Yes, we are. Are we biased in terms of other things like that? Yes. Yes, we probably are. But we always try to go after the hypocrisy, wherever we see hypocrisy. And, if conservatives feel like we are unfairly skewed toward making fun of them, two answers. First of all, we don't have any obligation to be fair. Second of all, stop complaining. Take personal responsibility, as you always say. Do your own show. Make fun of liberals. You have your own network.
They've tried,
yes. No one is stopping you. No one is stopping you from going out and making your own show that goes after liberals. The fact that you failed up to this point is your failure, unless you want to blame other people, which I know you don't want to do because as conservatives, you take personal responsibility for your failures.
Well, okay, we're going to go to the phones. Brady is on the line. Welcome to The Source, Brady.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question for David there. It sounded early on like he was saying that his Twitter account was divinely inspired, and yet, if I'm not mistaken, he said later that he was an atheist. So I'm just trying to reconcile those two things and figure out where he's coming from.
Brady, I'm trying to reconcile those two things too. I'll be honest with you, it's a premise. The truth of the matter is, in all honesty, I am an atheist. The tweets are not divinely inspired. They are written by me entirely. I have just let you see through the mask, through the mirror. They are not divinely inspired. However, I do often, although not in this case, obviously, anymore, I do often like to maintain the facade that they are inspired by God because it is amusing to me to do so.
So, does that ruin the illusion that now we know the truth, that these are not divinely inspired tweets, that you're just making this stuff up?
I actually feel like, obviously, everyone knows I'm writing them and it's not by God, but there is, in any entertainment, in any magic act, there is some enchantment, there's some magic in feeling like there's something, some trick being pulled over you, even if it's the most blatantly obvious trick in the world that no one is being tricked by, i.e. that God is writing these tweets. So I do think that people like to play along with me very often.
Right. We don't really believe the magician sawed a woman in half.
Exactly.
We'd call the police on them.
Exactly. Everyone knows that there's some kind of trick going on, and But we're okay with it because it's fun to be fooled, in the words of the old Gershwin classic.
And so my question is, I mean, you write so many tweets, and there's like, what, 12, 20 a day sometimes? A lot.
That's a function of my not having other and better, more gainful employment.
I was wondering if you had interns or a tweet bot.
No.
Sort of monkeys in a room with typewriters.
No. What I have is a lot of time. And what I'm looking forward to in the near future is having much less time so I can be paid for writing funny things rather than not be paid to write funny things.
You know, and some of the stuff you write is has nothing to do with religion. It's just funny stuff. I'm going to try and find one right here. One of them was about the next big thing for the NBA would be
– Yes, that the next big milestone for the NBA would be the first openly good player for the Charlotte Bobcats.
Okay. And
although I have to say, when I first wrote that one, I wrote for the Charlotte Hornets. And obviously that's wrong. And I was immediately told by several fans, no, it's Bobcats. And I felt terrible because that's the kind of mistake that I might make, but of course the Lord and Savior would not make. So I had to fix that very quickly. But I do have to say that that is a testimony, because I'm not that – I follow sports. And the fact that I forgot about the Bobcats, I think, speaks to the Bobcats. Not just me, but to the Bobcats.
Right. And so in your book about the Bible, the Last Testament, what are you – real quickly, what are you – where is it going? We got about 30 seconds. Tell me about the book.
The book is The Last Testament. It's a memoir by God. In it, he goes over and sort of reviews in his own words his thoughts about Genesis, Exodus – Jesus, his son.
I heard he was a great carpenter.
He was a decent carpenter.
I said he would sit on. You'd sit on a chair he'd made, and your back would be great. It would be like a miracle.
Yeah, chairs were good. He was less facile with desks. And then also the Quran. His thoughts about America. His thoughts about sports. His thoughts about love. His thoughts about celebrities. And it's a 300-page book written in chapter and verse form, and it will illuminate you and get you ready for the imminent apocalypse.
Right, which we didn't have.
Yeah, had one scheduled for December 21st of last year, the Mayan apocalypse.
Didn't work out that way.
People crush on the Mayans, but...
All right, so more of that tonight at the Jewish Community Center. More information online at jccsanantonio.org. That's it for this half hour of The Source. We'll be back. Stay tuned after the news.